Welcome, everybody, to another episode of The Self-Aware Millennial. I am your host, J-Mix. And just so you know, if you're watching on YouTube, I'm actually doing this differently because my guest is actually here in my studio apartment. And so it's just going to be interesting me like actually trying to look over at the camera so that everybody sees me. If you're listening, it doesn't really matter. So I have a few announcements that I wanted to get out just before we actually get into this conversation that we're going to have. Don't forget to like and subscribe, follow, especially on your favorite streaming service.
Yes.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you. See, I got cheerleaders here today, y'all. Cheerleaders. The Self-Aware Millennial is also on YouTube, as I was just saying. So like and subscribe. Facial expressions matter. Now, this is funny because I was writing this up yesterday. I was writing up my outline and I accidentally spelt depression, derp-pression.
Derp.
Like D-E-R-P, depression.
Yeah, you got the derp-pression.
And I was like, you know what, let me just keep it for this. So I wanted to let y'all know this past week was kind of really bad for me. I had a lot of bad depression and anxiety. I know I always present myself like I'm really bubbly and high energy, but it really was not this way. I feel like this is the most high energy I've been all week when I'm not skating. So just letting you know that you're not alone. And I wouldn't say I know exactly what sparked it. I know that there's just been a lot, I think, personally for me with a lot of unfortunate just realizations and still having like a lot of self-doubt about certain things. And it has a lot to do with the pandemic as well, unfortunately. And just like my life is like completely different than it was before the quarantine. And so as much as I like the difference, it's still something that my body overall is trying to get used to still. And so like my body's like, you should be working, you should be doing X, Y, and Z, because I was always go, 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 go. And there's still parts of me that just wants to be a really hard worker when I don't have to be. And my issue, and I think a lot of our issues is that we want to be successful and that we should be getting the bag. And they praise people that work hard and that they work a lot. And in this capitalist society, it seems as though a lot of folks don't get a chance to live freely, live liberatingly. I don't know if liberatingly is a word. I've also been working on skating. I've been doing a lot of that. And I think because I'm also trying to kind of tap into that creativity bug again, I'm going to start creating some beats to skate to so that it'll give me more incentive, more motivation to start creating more music again. I've already done like one and I'm pretty happy with it. But shout out to New Orleans Skate School, by the way, because I just started going to their classes and, you know, they're still starting up and they're trying to figure out what would work. And I was telling them how I make beats and they're like, ooh, let's make some beats so that we'll have like slow beats. Like if you're trying to learn something so that they have something that they can use the rhythms to, or if they want something really fast, like just depending on what they're teaching the school or the students at the time, it really does matter what tempo or like the style of music. So like, I'm probably going to get that going and just like I won't be charging for it, but it'll just be something that just get me back into like my creative bubble. Well, everybody, I want you to meet a good friend of mine. I'm laughing because, okay, so I should also say before, I'm going to introduce you. This is JD.
Yes.
JD.
Let's
Okay. JD, everybody. And are you okay with everybody saying, like, you want to go by JD?
Yeah, that's, yeah.
Okay,
I've
cool.
always gone by JD. I'm a junior, so, yeah, that's why.
Oh, you're a junior?
Yeah,
like
I'm a junior. I'm John David Jr. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And, two Johns in the house, wasn't it? So JD.
I was trying to figure out, like, what those initials were. I'm like, is it James David or
I get Jack Daniels a lot because people think
Jack
that's
Daniels.
Really clever, obviously. But no, yeah.
I kind of like
pretty bland. John David.
JD, everybody.
Thank you. Yeah.
You know what? Let me just premise this. Y'all, JD, we met on Tinder. I can't completely remember like the time frame of when we met on Tinder, but like
it's
I remember
been a good bit now.
Yeah, it's been it feels like it's been almost a year. But I remember that like we exchanged numbers at least, and then like I deleted you off of Tinder, and then like you texted me like a while later and was like, hey, it's JD, you remember me? He's like, and I was like, oh, oh,
that
right.
That paints me in a sad, disparaging light.
Yeah. You had to go back to Colorado?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I go back home a lot to Colorado, so in the off chance that I was going back home, it was probably just in and out of things. But like you, I mean, I think like a lot of people, there's sometimes you just are seeking that like outward validation, and there's other times where you're just kind of like oscillating away from it. And so like mm-hmm. sometimes you're just like not vibing with that, you know, what you're looking for there, I guess, which would yeah. be like a one-off experience. And you're just kind of like content with something maybe more long-term. And
yeah.
so you just kind of like push all that to the side. And
what I had done like on my Tinder, at least at that point, I was just like trying to sweep it out of people I wasn't really talking to. And I was just like, oh, well, I remember mentioning, like I saw you and I was just like, oh, we already exchanged numbers, and I forget exactly what it was, but I'm glad that we're still friends.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's yeah, friendship is paramount. I mean, like, all that other stuff is, you know, it's all nice and well and good, but being able to respect each other and just be friends and, like, at the end of the day, like, be able to have a conversation about something that you're both passionate about is, I think, much more important than any of the other trivial shit that you can find on the dating apps.
Agreed. So,
yeah, the friendship's always good.
Yeah. I mean, I've had conversations about Tinder on this podcast already, but I don't know, like these days, at least with Tinder for me, I'm just like, I'm still on it, but I don't know. I think it's maybe because it's like the quarantine and like,
I think there's a lot of people that are obviously looking for attention, because they can't get it the way they used to. So it's just like, it's not a fault of anyone. I think everyone's just looking for that attention and that like closeness, and when you can't physically get it, when you can't go to the bar, go to the shows, or do what you want to do and meet people, there's, you know, kind of a few outlets, and because it's so easy and it's convenient, you can do it from your couch while, you know, watching TV or a movie or playing video games, you know, you just like, it's convenient for people. So I understand it. For me personally, it's like I ran my course with that, mm-hmm. and it's like I dipped my toes in that, and I'm more than happy with the outcome. I feel like I kind of came away unscathed and like no
That's
terrible
good.
Stories. Yeah, right.
That's
like,
good.
Like nothing bad. And now I'm like, you know, not in search of that same exact thing.
Same. What do you do for a living? Just to let the audience is aware, even if they care. I don't know if they care, but let's say they care.
Yeah.
Let's just say they care.
In 2016, I moved down here to work at Lucy's Retired Surfers Bar.
Love their queso.
Yeah, the queso. King. And my family had bought that business, bought into that business with the owners that had it for over 20 years. And so I just wanted to hop in. I had been in the food industry for like 10 years. Food industry was pretty kind to me. I worked in Australia and Colorado and on the East Coast. And,
cool.
Yeah, I got to travel a bit doing stuff and really fell in love with that, the atmosphere and the people. So that's what kind of brought me down to New Orleans, was that it's such a foodie town and I had an opportunity to kind of work at this. It's a surfers, retired surfers bar for people who don't know. It's pretty, supposed to be this chill, you know, relaxed environment where everyone's just kind of having a good time. And that's
So why is it a retired surfer's bar? I never got that.
Well, so the original owner, Bruce Rampick, who's a fantastic guy, he and his wife, Susan, they built the first Lucy's in New York City in the 80s. And the whole idea was that they wanted to have this escape from the concrete jungle that was like the downtown New York City and the Wall Street. So they built this place that was like, you know, bamboo shutters and, you know, flowers and girls in tank tops and like kind of this like, you know, atmosphere like you would find maybe on a Hawaiian beach or something with surfboards and the surfer chill attitude. So like all the suits would leave Wall Street and they'd go flood into Lucy's. And so anyway, it just ended up being kind of niche and cliche and cool. And
yeah, especially in New York.
Yeah. And they took it to New Orleans, and New York, you know, ended up fading away, which is sad. But New Orleans became the mainstay.
Okay.
And, yeah.
Is that the only Lucy's, or are there other locations?
No, there's a couple more locations in Gulf Shores, Alabama, Biloxi, Mississippi.
Yeah.
Orangestad, Aruba, the island of Aruba in the Caribbean.
Ooh. Yeah. Okay. Shoot. So you got connections in Aruba. Yeah. Okay. That's good to know. All right.
Yeah. But yeah, it's actually funny because recently I'm transitioning away from the business. It's gone very corporate. Because we're opening all these locations, we've had to change the structure of the day-to-day stuff and like how we interact with our customers, how we interact with our staff.
Yeah.
And that change was, did not really vibe with me. So like,
yeah,
I've really taken a step back and I'm now looking to move away from it because I just, it's important to do the, to learn the corporate thing. And I feel like I learned a lot from my mistakes. Mm-hmm. I made a lot of mistakes early on from being naive.
Yeah.
And just not seeing the clear picture.
Yeah.
And I'm really happy for that. I'm really happy that I got to make those mistakes in an environment that was forgiving. And
yeah, they're cool people over there.
Yeah. And obviously, but the, you know, the whole family thing, it was complicated and it still remains complicated because of that. But I think that it ultimately it's all for the best and it was a really good experience.
Right.
So now I'm in transition and I am unemployed.
Aren't we all? Yeah. I know I am too. Gosh.
Yeah, but, it's always good to have a job. It's always good to learn from the job that you had. And if you walk away and you've got more knowledge than you had when you started and you can believe in yourself, then that's what you got, right?
Yeah.
More than you had when you started and that's all you need. So, yeah, get over it. Get over the sadness. Take
right.
a few weeks, take a few months, whatever it is, and sulk in it and then wake up and just say, all right, tomorrow's a new day. Let's go.
I was just curious because, you know, I like to ask the out there questions. I wanted to know, why'd you swipe right on me?
Wow. That's interesting. That's funny that we go back to the Tinder thing.
Well, I mean, yeah, I was just curious.
It's
curiosity kills the cat.
I mean, I really don't think there's much to the swipe right. I think to say that it's anything other than physical would be a lie. Unless
Agreed.
You're like really clever and you have something really fucking funny in your profile. Then like,
yeah.
Or you know, something really witty. Yeah, you know, then obviously that could get you some attention. Yeah, I think that's good too. But I think for the most part, it's like, you know, we're all be lying to each other and to ourselves to pretend it's not, you know, physical. And
yeah.
And that's okay.
It is what right. It is. Yeah.
Yeah.
The same reason I swiped right on you. I was just like, oh, this person, he looks like some celebrity I remembered I really liked. So I was like, swipe
that's
right.
So funny. I never in my life have heard that I look like a celebrity until I came to New Orleans. And then.
Wait, so what celebrity do you.
It's Harry Styles that people tell me I look like.
Harry Styles?
From like One Direction. Like, I
don't know. What?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't see that,
yeah,
but I was thinking like.
My girlfriend Allison, she's like, it's like her. Long lost love and
Harry Styles.
Harry Styles, yeah, I swear she's obsessed with him. It's hilarious. I wonder if that plays any motivation in why
Harry Styles. Likes me, I don't see it, but hey, you know everybody has different perspectives, and I can't, you know, yuck someone else's yum. I personally thought you had more of like a, and I don't think a lot of people know who this actor is, but Jonathan Brandis, who did a lot of stuff back in like the 80s, 90s.
Like, I like
you ever
that.
Saw Neverending Story 2. I was like, he's cute. And like, he's done a couple other things, but then he passed away like very young. So
when I was in Australia, I got Blake from with Workaholics. Have you ever seen that show?
No.
Yeah, it's a dumb, it's a great show, but it's dumb. And I got Blake because of my long hair.
You've been growing your hair out.
Yeah, it's coming off. It's coming off. But yeah, the quarantine flow has been flowing for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I like long hair, but that's just my weakness, unfortunately. So
I'm like 12 inches away from donating, so I don't think I'm gonna make it.
How long does your hair have to be to donate?
I think you have to be able to cut off like 16 inches or something.
Oh,
That's a lot.
Yeah, that's a lot of hair. I don't think I have 16 inches, and I've been growing my hair since 2012.
I don't know the rules, though. Don't quote me on that, internet. I'm going to sound like an idiot.
All right, y'all. So we are going to do a new segment that I'm going to just try out. Just going to play around with it, but I'm calling it Phased or Unfazed. So it's going to be a segment where we reflect on current event stories that basically make folks kind of uncomfortable. And I wanted to talk about, at least today, I wanted to talk just about, because it's like really hot here in New Orleans, the fact that there will be no Mardi Gras parades in New Orleans in 2021. According to the city's website, Mayor Latoya Cantrell, who lives like three doors down from here, by the way, she posted a link to frequently asked questions for Mardi Gras 2021. In the guide under the parade section, the city confirms that there will be no parades during the coronavirus pandemic for obvious reasons. I thankfully have not encountered anybody who's like been super upset with it, but I don't know. I just may not have been paying much attention, but have you encountered anybody that?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I've encountered a lot of people that, but you know, I think people often misrepresent both sides. And I think that's why there seems to be a lot of contention around the issue. Like on one side, you have people that are thinking social well-being and are thinking about everyone staying healthy and the benefit of beating this thing. And if we all wore masks and we do it now and we shut down, then we'll be out of it and we'll be able to reopen. So you see the merit behind that. And then you look at small business owners that have been business owners for maybe 20 or 30 years that are shutting their doors and that have during the crisis. And it becomes this, like, how much more can they take? And did we already screw this up so bad that we just kind of, like, need to, like, resuscitate these businesses with a government bailout, with a stimulus bailout? And that's, like, probably what needs to happen. But is that going
to happen? I'm still waiting on that second check.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people that feel that way. I don't remember what the figure was, but I think if you divide the number of the stimulus check by the amount of days that it has been, it's less than $6 a day or something.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know. I don't know. I could do the math. It's pretty simple math, but I don't know it.
What the exact numbers
anyway,
are.
Anyway, that's not enough.
Yeah.
Point being.
So this news, am I guessing it's leaving you phased or unfazed?
I actually think it's really interesting. I mean, you know me, I'm the type of person that's like, I see a lot of contentious discussion coming from this. And for that reason, I find it interesting. I understand business owners' perspectives. I understand their need to open and to make money and to keep the wheelhouse going. I understand people that think that doing any more damage is just going to prolong the economic damage and that it will just hinder their ability to open in the future. So it's like you're either going to make a little money now and sign your death warrant later in the year, or you're going to like close and then, you know, get resuscitated by the government and survive afterwards. And I don't know. I'm not entirely sure people believe in it. I'm not entirely sure that people really believe in the COVID crisis as it truly has been presented. I treat it like if I were trying to get my smartphone fixed or if I was trying to go to the doctor. It's just like there are specialists that exist in the world for a reason. People that are dedicated to their studies, that are very intelligent, that have worked very hard to understand what they do.
Yeah.
And when they give you suggestions, you usually follow them, especially like doctors. You know, it's just what we do. It's how we function. So I've always been very confused that it's been an issue, the mask issue, you know, or is Corona real? It's like, it's obviously real. You just talk to a professional, any professional. You don't have to go like to some government professional. Go to your local doctor. Go to the guy that tells you how to stay healthy every year that your family's been seeing it for 25 years. My guess is he'll probably be pretty straight up with you. I see this.
You see both sides.
And I see both sides having a very valid stance, but both shouting very loudly, "You're wrong."
Yeah.
And I'm right. And I need to be heard.
That's true.
And because they're both shouting over each other, no one feels heard.
That's true. I wouldn't say I'm like business savvy. Like I can understand what it means to like, you know, have to have your business open so that you make the money so that you can pay bills, keep things open. But
keep jobs available.
Keep jobs available as well.
I mean, if someone employs 15,000 people and they've had to cut back their salary by 50%, which means they fired or they've laid off, you know, 30% or 50% of the people they had. Like that's a lot of companies already. And like now they're going into a further period of suffering. So it's really not just this like bottom line thing where it's like, oh my God, my money. Oh, my money. It's like, no, it's like the business, the employees that go with it, the jobs that go with it. And so, yeah, I do see the fear as a real thing for people that have worked very hard to establish a livelihood and don't feel like this is the right way to take it away from them. Like, this isn't fair.
On my standpoint, I'm just like, man, we don't have a vaccine yet. And more than likely mean that more people will die. I mean, the whole reason that we had such a large spike at the beginning of COVID-19 was because of Mardi Gras. We could have technically have canceled it before, but it was too late.
Yeah,
you know, everybody had their tickets months in advance.
I think everyone, hindsight on that one, if like we could go back, you know, and like understand what we know now about everything, I don't think there's very many intelligent people that would suggest that we wouldn't cancel Mardi Gras last year in order to like not be the one of the. I think Louisiana was one of the worst states.
Yeah,
we were a spreader.
Because the whole world was in New Orleans.
But I mean that's you know, winding the clock back is in hindsight's always like. you know, your best friend and your worst enemy, right? Because like you have the benefit of being able to make the best decision that you can't make anymore.
Yeah.
So I like hindsight because of that. It allows us to see what we can do better in the future, but it's definitely not the most accurate barometer of like how we should make decisions, because we do forget what was, you know, always what's happening and the intel, you know, what people have been told, what they really know, and people getting run over by parade floats and stuff. We, you know,
that was the most wildest situation last year.
Mardi Gras was crazy. It was not just COVID. It was just the Mardi Gras.
But like 2020 in general, like I'm just thinking about all the different things that have happened just within this year. Like it feels like COVID-19, like when it first started, it feels like it was such a long time ago.
Yeah, there's been so much, days have been so much longer because people's days are not filled with distractions like they normally are.
Yeah, and that's probably, yeah, you're right. That's why
we all go to work. We have a day. We have a routine. We go about doing our things, and we see our social people. We go out for coffee or drinks or dinners or whatever it is. But we very much have a routine that deflects us from the, whatever existential grief or crisis is going on internally, which I'm pretty confident most people have at all times. But some people do a really good job of just maintaining a balance of like their schedule and then not letting that overwhelm themselves. But when you remove that schedule, I do think people find the days are a lot more difficult to get through because they're in their own heads a lot more. And the existential grief, the existential what is going on, it really creeps in. When in other days, you wouldn't have 16 hours a day to, you know, sit with your thoughts.
Now that I know that you're not fazed or unfazed by that news, we're going to do...
I'm sad. For everyone. I'm sad. You're sad? I'm sad for everyone. There's no one person wanted to cancel Mardi Gras.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's just something, me personally, I'm just used to at this point. I've lived here my whole life, and I mean, not that I really go to parades like talking about. I just go for the social aspect of it, because I know, like, that's probably the only time I'm going to see all my friends in one spot.
Yeah.
Because it's hard to get them together otherwise.
Yeah. New Orleans rarely makes national news. So when New Orleans makes national news, it's either for like a, you know, like a devastating hurricane or something wild. And we made, you know, it was national news. That,
yeah.
And that's because people are using it as a barometer of the future of the, you know, what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was just looking at a map the other day or just a couple of hours ago, but they have states right now that don't require masks. Like there's no like,
Mask mandate. That doesn't surprise me.
There's like at least 10.
It's become such a political issue at this
point.
That's
so
Yeah, crazy. Which again is so interesting that...
Yeah.
Because there's... please answer me. If someone online could even comment an answer to this, like in what other facet of life where we're seeking answers or we're seeking knowledge, do we go to a professional and say... No, like you don't know what you're talking about. And this issue actually doesn't have anything to do with what you study and know. Mm-hmm. It has to do with something else unrelated.
Hmm.
It just doesn't make sense. It's the equivalent of going to your doctor and him saying you have arthritis and you being like, no, it just doesn't make, you wouldn't do it. It just doesn't make any sense. So like I know a virologist that works at Tulane. She's a really good friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
She works tirelessly, 60-hour weeks. She works with COVID samples, live tissue samples. She's very intelligent. She's very hardworking. She's one of the sweetest people ever. Mm. She would not harm anyone. Like, she's so sweet. And, like, to think that she could have some sort of political motivation or understanding, you know, or, like, that she in private, while we're getting coffee, is telling me this to, like, to further some agenda, some secret agenda that she's on board with. It's like, guys, come on. Like, we're all friends here. Come on. Like,
right.
None of us are super villain geniuses. There's no Lex Luthers walking around. Certainly not thousands of them. Like,
Lord. Anyway. Well, let's get into the next segment, which is ponytails. So this has been around for a little bit. Oh, God.
My ponytail? No, I can't.
Wait, that's right. You can.
I can totally, almost.
You can almost do a ponytail?
I wouldn't.
Even like a half-up, half-up ponytail?
Yeah, just so everyone knows, this is COVID flow. This is not real.
It's all an illusion. It's fake. It's not real.
It'll become a mullet next week. And you'll know.
Okay, well... Because we're feeling lazy, we're not actually going to put ponytail in our head this week. But ponytails, if you are just joining us for the first time, it's with tails spelled T-A-L-E-S, by the way. It's an icebreaker where we ask our friends, or I ask my friends, we ask each other to tell a tale with a ponytail in our head, which we won't be doing. And basically, I give the name of the topic, and then we both share our ponytail.
Interesting.
Now, this one is something that I actually posed on my Instagram a couple of days ago this past week, and I wanted to hear your thoughts on it. And I feel like we kind of already had this conversation on my end, so I'm not going to go into too much detail, but the question, the ponytail topic for today, and y'all always know I like to do the uncomfortable conversation, so this is gonna be chef's kiss. So tell me a tale about the last person or any person that you still have yet to get over. So somebody that you haven't gotten over.
So not necessarily like love related?
Yes.
Okay, so just like anything, right?
Yeah.
Oh, then I mean, without being too candid and like going into the actual details of a relationship, because I don't want to disparage anyone on air.
Yeah.
A family member. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I in growing up and becoming very attached to someone, mm-hmm. and then later in life finding out that maybe those attachments weren't as deep and as real on the other end as you thought they were, and maybe not as shared, is deeply upsetting. And, you know, it's a big letdown. But like I said, without going into any disparaging details, which I've refused to do, just based
that's
on...
That's fine.
You know, love is funny because I don't have anyone that I had this period of my life where I was in a deep, dark depression in my mid-20s, and a lot of it was around just not understanding what I was doing wrong to, like, cause these things to keep happening, like, these relationships to keep happening, where I was just having bad relationships, and I was doing the wrong things and acting out and just not being a good person to be with. And so what is going on here? And the reality was I just hadn't let go of a lot of stuff. And I wasn't really just accepted that, like, it's
there were things
about
you were
me.
Bringing in to
Well, there's things I'm bringing in, but the most of it is, like, people have a whole life outside of you. And, like, a lot of what they decide to do is really separate from you. Like, it may be influenced by some of the negative behaviors that you portray, and that may influence how you talk in the future. But people are just on their own path, and they're trying to figure it out. And guess what? They can wake up on Sunday and have a completely different view of something that changes their course. And that's, I don't know, accepting that and understanding and having respect for that was like, okay, I understand why all of this is happening. I get it now, because like it's not, there's no rules. It's all chaotic. We're all trying to figure it out. We're all fucked up. We're all reacting to each other. And I haven't been very good to these people. So
I
need to be better. And just like that, it was like, oh, get over it all. Because it was just about getting over myself.
Yeah, so you could almost say that we're trying to figure out how to get over that. Get over yourself.
Well, it's what it is. It's an attachment to an idea, a person you used to be, you know, a vision, you know, this thing you hold yourself up to be, high esteem. But that person doesn't exist. And that it doesn't, and it didn't exist that way. What it did exist was behaviors that led to an outcome, just like a math problem. And if you can isolate them, I think it's important to do that and learn.
Great answer. Because that was like deep. Because I was just trying to be all like, I was just surface level.
16 hours every day, COVID.
But it all depends. Months. Like, you know, when you first, like the first thing that you think of when somebody asks you that question, I feel like, I mean, I wasn't the originator of this question, but, you know, I had been seeing it surface around like my Instagram, my Facebook. And I was just like, this is a good ponytails question. So might as well.
Yeah, it's a really good question.
Yeah. But for my ponytail, I mean, it's obviously going to be more obvious, but I'm not going to go in complete detail because I feel like I've already told you about this a little bit. But there was another person that I was involved with for a little bit, and we basically just weren't able to continue things, unfortunately, because of life things that were out of my control, out of our control. Because it ended so abruptly, I was not able to fully get over it. And it's just been hard because, like, it's kind of like when you all of a sudden lose a loved one to, like, an accident of some sort. And you never got a chance to, like, actually say goodbye to them or, like, have, like, you don't have, like, that closure. I definitely felt that there was so much more potential within our friendship, relationship, whatever you want to call it. But, like, it had to abruptly end because, you know, there was just certain boundaries that could not be crossed at that point. So, yeah, non-monogamy ain't for everybody, but you do learn a lot. And if you get through it, you're a warrior. So that was my ponytail.
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing.
You're welcome. Anytime. Well, let's go into a few topics that I did specifically because I knew that this, at least this next one, I was just like, okay, JD's going to want to love. He's going to be talking about this like crazy. This one is going to be about the Change My Mind dude. Which
Steven Crowder.
Steven Crowder. So if y'all know the Change...
Smartest dumb person.
Yes. If y'all don't know who Steven Crowder is, in February 2018, he tweeted a picture of himself seated behind a sign that reads, quote unquote, male privilege is a myth. Change my mind. And the caption, hello at TCU, and I think that's Texas Christian University. Come one, come all. Hashtag change my mind. The picture is part of Crowder's podcast and YouTube in which he attempts to have people with opposing viewpoints convince him of various issues. The post received more than like 900 retweets and like 64,000 likes in like 4 days, which I guess at that time, which isn't, I guess that's a lot. But I mean, I didn't even know the guy's name until I was
looking for political commentary. It was very, very exciting, as they would say in the I political guess. World, because it's, yeah. If it incites, like,
yeah, it stimulates, debate, yeah, debate, yeah.
Again, we'll get to these words. I put air quotes around these words because they're, this is not debate. This is very carefully designed hunting. Anyway, keep going.
Oh, no, I was just curious. So what are your thoughts on this dude, on Steven Crowder?
So Steven
at least,
Crowder.
Actually, male privilege is a myth.
Oh, well, we can get to his, like, okay. other stuff. Like, all right, so his belief systems are, like, that's all designed for clickbait. It's the equivalent yeah. of putting a clickbait video out.
Yeah.
And people are so reactive to that mm-hmm. dumb shit that they go in with this, like, high emotion, low intelligence level. Because, and I say intelligence, I don't mean, like, they're stupid. I mean that they're just not informed enough. Like, Steven Crowder goes in very informed. So, like, all mm-hmm. he's a debater, he's very intelligent, he's very verbose, he's very quick-witted. If he ever sees this, I want him to know that I'm not disparaging his intelligence in any way. I think he's actually quite intelligent. What I find most upsetting and fascinating about him is that he uses his little special gift, if you call it, his little whimsical way of using words to mince it up with the people and do this thing where he's like, oh, well, change my mind. I'm open to anything. But really, he's come there with loaded guns in terms of his knowledge.
Yeah.
His knowledge is all loaded guns, statistical loaded guns.
Yeah.
And there's only a few people that use statistics that way. And most of them are liars. They're trying to tell a story. And so Steven will go at these young people, target audience, obviously under 21,
mm-hmm.
because they can't formulate their thoughts very as clearly as an adult could, and they were not going to stay in the pocket of the argument. They're going to act out and get enraged when they're
yeah.
provoked. And then he uses them for the video to be like, aha, see, look how stupid and misinformed the lefty is, the liberal is, and look how smart and informed we actually are when you're telling us we're the dumb side of the argument. So it's very clever, but my question to him would be, why are you hurting America? Why? Like, what you're willing, you know it. I know you know it. Like, I know you're smart enough to know what you're doing, and good on you because you're making money doing it, a lot of money doing it. But fuck you also, because like, you also know that you're doing this with a very disparaging way of doing it. The tone, the way of talking to people, the way of painting yourself into this corner of like you're a martyr for the cause. It's all bullshit. And none of your arguments are actually defended very well when put up to, like, any moral standard. It's all very robotic. And, like, for that reason, I find a lot of his arguments indefensible. He's always, it's statistical, this is right, that's right, do you even know the laws? And it's like, yeah, well, you don't sound very human. You sound
right.
like you just want to be right.
Right.
So badly that you're missing the point, which is that, like, you could influence a vast majority of people to enjoy conversing together about topics that are controversial.
Or, yeah, something that'll bring people together, not...
Or you could use them to benefit yourself and drive a stake in the heart of this and just continue the divide, willingly, knowingly, that that's destroying what, like, what you think makes America great. So it's very strange to me that these people do the things they do, and it's veiled so thinly, it's not that well hidden, but people fall for it. They fall for it all day long, and they think he's... Like, you know, Ben Shapiro, you know, they think these right-wing talking points are very, very smart people. And it's like, yeah, well, if they were so smart, they would take up a better way of talking to other human beings.
Yeah.
They wouldn't be so disparaging and elite and rude And
that's the word, elite.
I don't care what religious belief system you have. If you look at your like religious deity or the person that you look up to mm-hmm. or you're spiritual, that person doesn't talk the way that they do.
Yeah.
And so like, I think we should try and model ourselves out the way we believe, you know, we want to be better every day. That's what we should try and be.
Yeah.
And it's just, you're a representation of someone not doing that. You're a representation of someone that willingly wants to hurt people. And for me, that's like unforgivable. It's just like, you're a fucking prick.
Right. So,
and I wish someone was smart enough to like just go in there and be like, you're bullshit, bro.
Who's got a Patreon? I've got a Patreon. Come join the Patreon to be a Patreon. Bonus content every week. $5 is all you need. Come join the place where I spill the tea on my self-aware discoveries. From sex and non-monogamy to depression and anxiety. T-Sam is here to give you glee, entertainment, love, and clarity. If you're all cut up, don't know where to go, join my Patreon to stay in the know.
Who's got a Patreon?
I've got a Patreon.
Come join the Patreon.
To be my Patreon. Join my Patreon to stay in the know. And I hope you enjoy the rest of the show.
Arguments conveniently have not made the clip. He strikes me as like an Alex Jones type. You know, like Alex Jones is out there walking around talking about like lizard people, and like he is so batshit insane. Like the InfoWars shit is so crazy. But then, crazily enough, Alex Jones was the first person to call out Epstein's pedophilia ring in the 90s.
Oh, okay.
So it's like, even, you know, the blind squirrel does find the nut once in a while. So like Steven Crowder uses those like moments, those brief moments where he does like seem normal to like really show off how like moral and kind and loving and caring he is. And it's like, you're such a piece of shit. Like, God damn it. Anyway.
No, but that kind of, like, makes me think about, I mean, especially when they're having, like, online Facebook debates, which I don't really even entertain anymore because, like, it's just not worth it. I'd much rather have a conversation, even if it's an opposing sides, I'd rather it be in person versus, like, online, because you could easily misinterpret what someone writes online versus, like, actually hearing them say the same thing in person.
Yeah, text arguments are not the same thing.
Yeah, and so some of the things, especially when it comes to anything political or anything of that nature that I know is going to grind somebody's gears, I'm just like, we are not having this conversation over Facebook. You can Zoom me, you can FaceTime me, but we are not having this. Like, I'm not going to be, I'm saving my fingers, reclaiming my fingers.
Yeah.
I ain't.
And it's also damaging to the relationship. I don't think there's many people
Absolutely.
That can talk online about contentious things and not at one point in the conversation feel very, very enraged. So,
yeah.
It's just the way that we read things, you know? It's just the inflection we put on it ourselves, the words.
Yeah, people like downright like they will delete somebody that has a different opinion than them. I mean, to each their own, but at least for me, I'm just like, I'd rather be around people that don't necessarily have the same viewpoint as me, because I want to understand other people's perspectives. And there's a lot of times when people have different viewpoints that like make complete sense. Like, I may still like completely hone into what my viewpoint is, but like I can understand theirs as well. From their perspective, like depending on how they grew up or how they, I don't know, like what their whole just like lifestyle is, like it would just make more sense for them to view things that way versus me who has a different lifestyle or X, Y, and Z. So like just kind of like forgiving people for their viewpoints, even if you don't agree with them, they're still valid. And like you were saying earlier, like everybody wants to be right and they want everybody else to be wrong. And I feel like I'm still, I feel guilty of that every now and then, but I try to catch myself and I'm like, I may be trying to act like I'm the right person here, but I may not be. Actually, I probably am not. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you're right either. It just means that we have very strong opinions and that's that.
Yeah. Yeah, there's funny words that people throw around and they think that they don't fall into the category, but like extremism is a word because it has extreme in it. I think people like associate it with terroristic behavior or something like really wild, but like extremism is just like representing one side and viewing the other side as like the enemy.
Yeah.
So like there by definition are like a lot of extremists in this country, in the sense that like they will do anything to validate their own opinion as long as it shows that the other side is wrong.
Yeah.
And they're on the right side of things. And then I think that desire to be right deviates a huge court. Like, it just takes us so far away from the conversation we should have. How do we get back to being like happy together or sharing a space? And I don't know. it's complicated. That's all there is to say about it. It's so complicated.
It is complicated. That's why we're talking about it. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, the other topic I want to talk about, because I think this has also been like another cool thing about, at least within the last couple of months, because there are a lot of us like myself who are living a completely different lifestyle than they were before. And there's been a lot of time for a lot of us to unlearn a lot of the bullshit that we've been susceptible to throughout our entire lives. There are even like folks that are older than me that are on the journey to unlearn bullshit. So I just wanted to reiterate that the Self-Aware Millennial is very much a platform where I'm always encouraging the listeners to unlearn what we have been absorbing since childhood. So our influences and how we interact with one another come from the folks we looked up to, like our parents, or, you know, just even just the kids around our, in our little pod of situations. Like, we look up to them and we look to them to see like what we're supposed to be doing. Even if what they were doing was wrong or unethical, like, we still like saw what they were doing and we absorb that. Like, when we're kids, we absorb everything. And then it's like you absorb it. And then after that, it's hard to unlearn it. So what are some pivotal constructs about, let's just say, life that you feel you have had to unlearn?
Oh, that's a really interesting question. I feel like I went through an entire character change when I was just out of high school. So
character change.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's like crazy to think about who I was and who I am. But when I was young, I was an athlete. That was like all I wanted to do. It's all I did. It's all I focused on.
What sport?
All sports.
You did all the sports.
Dude, I was obsessed with, like, just it all. I did play some particular sports that I ended up wanting to play, like, in college. And, you know, I wanted to play soccer in college. And I wanted to play squash in college. And baseball and all sorts of fun things. I wanted to do it all. I wanted to be a professional athlete. And so, like, literally, and I don't know how to describe this to anyone other than my brain was, like, limited. I was in a periscope. I was, like, looking down life at, like, this very limited lane. I was not thinking about the existential. I was not thinking about, like, my own place and my affection or did people like me. I just assumed that everything was, like, good all the time and perfect and, like, it's crazy to look back on and think that I could have been so naive.
Yeah.
And to have accepted, you know, what the life that I was given in this, like, really rich mountain town in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
And just think that that's, like, what life is, you know? And anyway, to then have that experience and then to compare it to the years following where I injured my shoulder, had to get multiple surgeries, kind of, like, moved away from sports, competitive sports, and, you know, like, didn't go to college and kind of just got in the workforce and had this huge, like, character disaster where I was like, who am I? Like, my whole life.
You had that quarter life crisis almost?
Yeah, I've been an athlete. I know myself as one thing. I know that I'm validated for one thing.
Right.
It wasn't like intelligence or schoolwork or for anything else. It was always sports. So I was like, without that, like, what makes me me? And I don't think I was consciously asking myself those questions. I think I was just freaking out.
An identity crisis.
Yeah. And it took me a long time to unwind that rubber band and to, like, undo the tension and figure out that I just was living a life that wasn't, like, I was doing things that wasn't who I was. And I had, like, taken on a lot of moral constructs that didn't represent who I actually was. And again, I don't want to disparage, you know, anyone, certainly not family. But, like, when you're growing up and you learn elitism and you learn elitism at, like, as a broad word, but, like, just being you're more gifted and you're better than other people, mm-hmm. and things are just gonna be this way, like, you're just better. It's like this weird complex you get in your head that's totally fucked up, but it's real. And then one day you wake up and you realize how not real it is and how you know, it's not been fair for you to have been fed that. And it's like, man, what else have you been saying that, like, maybe isn't so right? And then when you really get into it and you start to see the cracks and the fissures of, like, their own behaviors, mm-hmm. And then you see the standard they were holding you to as if, like, they were embodying them themselves.
Yeah.
That's very tough to swallow because it's so contradictory, you know? So I think moving on from that was a big one, and being like, I don't represent the moral values, you know, you pretend to represent. I do have those values, and I'm going to represent them in my actions. Right. So, and that will be the difference between you and me, is that everyone will think that we're the same, but deep down you'll have this, you'll know that you're not, and that you're acting, this is all an act, and it's a projection for everyone to look good. And that for me, it's, I've disassociated from it, and it's just like, this is how I feel good. This is how I move on.
So you would say you had like your quarter life situation, like right out of high school.
Yeah, 18, and 20, just, 23.
Yeah.
Like super depressed, traveling around, went to a couple of rehabs. Nothing serious though. I was always just a weed smoker. I never got into hard drugs. But my parents, who were still married at the time, were trying to really keep up this family image. And this like,
we're
well-kempt and everything's all good. And again, I don't want to disparage anyone. So really don't want to go further about it. But
that's fine.
Yeah, no, it's just a differentiation in like, it's seeing the world for how it actually is and then saying, I'm going to actually act this out rather than pretending to.
Yeah.
And that'll be that.
So would you say your unlearning process kind of started at that point?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Because I'm trying to think about like when I was starting to unlearn things. And I feel like there was always hints of it, even as I was growing up as a child. Like, I wasn't even, and I think one thing that really sticks out to me right now is when I was, like, back in high school, I think I may have been 16, 17 years old or something like that, and I remember being really upset with, like, my other classmates that were, like, drinking underage, and I'm just, like, not that I had the desire to do it with them, I never did, but, like, I was just, like, and I was actually talking about my boyfriend about this the other day, but like I've always been like bitter about other people's like milestones, like when people will get their first car or when people like get their first house or they get married or they have kids or whatever. Especially if it's all happening at the same time, especially right now, like I'm a millennial, everybody's having children, everybody's having pandemic babies, everybody is having like weddings and all kinds of stuff are happening like right now. And for some reason, like I have like this sense of bitterness towards it. And I don't know if it's because I personally want it myself, because I feel like I don't, at least not right now, because I don't personally feel ready, but I'm not making people feel bad about it. I'm like, it's all internal, but like, I still feel like, unfortunately, there's still like this energy that I kind of give off where, I mean, I'm loving my life, like without having kids, without being like, just like having like these milestones that other people my age are doing. And I should just be okay with like just living in it and not necessarily commenting on it, or I don't really
judging
know.
What it. I'm
going. Yeah. Or judging
people judging for it. Making shitty decisions. Right. That's right. The whole concept of what you're trying to, well, not, yeah. I mean, like not trying to disparage anyone because like, that's obviously your decision, but like, you know, like making these short-sighted decisions, as some would call it, is funny because, and this is where I'll probably earn some of those viewers that hate me back.
let's go.
I think that time has a funny way of affecting shitty stories. And for good and bad, but I know people that through less than, from the out looking in, from like outside looking into their scenario, it wasn't that pretty. And it looked like that was some really stupid shit. And you really shouldn't have had that kid. But 5 years on, and you know, 5 years of time, it's so interesting to look at what's happened and to say, you know, that, shitty decision for sure. But like,
You morph into a new reality.
Yeah, you open a door that you can't understand is going to, you know, just give you so many possibilities in your own life, you know, in your own mindset. So I know I get triggered by it because I know that that comes from envy, because I do deeply want this.
Is it envy?
For me, want to have this sense of like, I got it. Like I have the one that's not going to leave me. I have the one that wants to have kids with me and buy a house and grow old together and talk about things and drink hot chocolate on Christmas and do all the things you want to do with, you know, someone forever. Yeah. But like, that's never assured. And so you look across the aisle and you see people that might have that. And for me, it's like,
the grass is always greener.
It's good for you. It's like, good for you. Like, I want what you have.
Yeah.
I have envy. I'm not going to lie to you.
Okay, cool. And
even when they have random kids, I'm like envious that they have the ability to even make, to have the balls to make that decision.
Yeah.
I could never just Yeah, let's have a kid.
You know, well, no, most of
for
us...
2 months? Let's
right.
have a kid. It happens all the time. I have good people that have done that. I know one of my good friends that worked with me for a long time just randomly.
That's a privilege to be able to just decide when you have a child.
I don't mean like literally decide, but like to like do the necessary steps to make it possible to have a kid, you know, and then all of a sudden you have a kid on the horizon and it's like you could have prevented that from happening pretty easily, but you didn't care.
Right.
And now here you are and you have a kid.
Yeah.
And it's like, but you know, that's life's funny that way.
I'm digging deep down. It doesn't feel like envy for me, though. Like, does, yeah, I don't feel envious. I'm just like...
I just know myself.
Yeah. And I know envious. Myself, too. And I'm just like, at least for me, I'm like... And I know, like, humans in general, we follow each other. We are in packs. We watch what each other does. And, you know, we're in a way sheeple. I like to say, you know, sheeple, sheep, people. And, you know, depending on where we are in our lives with other people that are around us in our age, like, you know, we just kind of follow the leader. But I think in the constructs of, like, what we are already expecting, like, we already have this timeline in our, ingrained in our memory. It's manifested in, like, Disney movies is manifested and just, like, watching, you know, parents or, like, adults and... You know, they have songs about it. First comes love, then comes marriage, then comes whoever in a baby carriage. Like, there's little, like, songs about this timeline that you're supposed to be on. And so, like, when you're not on that timeline, it's almost, like, something wrong with you. And I still don't know exactly how I feel about that. And that's just something, that's why I like to always re-bring it up just to see if there's, like, any new clarity. But there really isn't. I just don't know why I always have, like, this... I should be happy for people, but for some reason there is still like a sense of bitterness. But we're gonna figure it out. I'm gonna figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a comedy first person, so like I think the worst things, like as a joke, like in my head when people tell me shit like that. Mm-hmm. But like I don't actually, you know, actually think it. It's just like I really like making funny jokes to myself that I may have seen in a really crass comedy at some point. So like if someone like, you know, good friend is like, "Hey, I'm having a kid with a girl I've been dating for 2 months," in my head, I make a really funny joke. Mm-hmm. But what comes out of my mouth is not that funny joke.
Gotcha.
So that's my world. You know, I think a lot of people are that way. You know, life's funny in your own head, right?
Always. So yeah, y'all, we're doing Jame Explains It All, which is basically an advice column where my listeners, if they want advice from moi or my guests, we give it to them. But I have not been getting much advice lately. I've been getting more testimonials, which is great, but I would much rather put that in a different light and maybe do like a different segment for that. But we're gonna actually give some feedback to each other about advice that we may have for each other, and we're just gonna turn it around and make it work that way. So I didn't really think about this very much.
Yeah,
at least on my end,
I'm not one to really ask for advice. Not because I don't need it, because I just don't typically feel I don't feel comfortable putting that burden on people.
Well, it doesn't have to be advice about like something super deep. We can do something like I don't know. Have you ever made gumbo?
No.
You haven't? Do you want some advice on how to make gumbo?
I can't eat gumbo because I'm...
You can't?
Well, no, wait. I could if I made a roux that was gluten-free with corn syrup. I have celiac disease.
Dang.
I know. What a letdown, right?
Goodness.
I know. I'm like one of the original patients. Not really. It's just that I've been diagnosed for a long time. It's not like the trendy.
Right. You had celiac before celiac was trendy.
What I'm really trying to say is that if there were a Krispy Kreme here, I would love to eat it, but
there,
I can't.
There is a Krispy Kreme.
God damn it. I love gluten. For all you gluten eaters out there, you're so lucky.
With celiac, like what is, cause I mean, I've never.
It's an autoimmune deficiency. It's like where your body, the villi in your body and your intestines that absorb nutrients and stuff when you're eating food, they're like little tiny fingers that are floating on your intestinal walls.
Yeah.
And when gluten comes in contact with them, when you're celiac, they like fall flat and kind of die off. And it limits the amount of nutrition you can take in. And the immune system has a response to that where it increases the amount of white blood cells that you have to like way off the charts, and that's dangerous because that's where you develop autoimmune disorders like multiple sclerosis and things like that. At least that's from what I understand. It's like it can lead to autoimmune disorders can lead to other disorders that are much worse. So it's like exacerbating them in the long term is not in one's benefit. But it's not like if I eat gluten, I'm going to get anaphylactic like a peanut and like my throat's going to swell up and I'm going to die. I'm just going to get like a stomach ache. And if I keep doing it, it's going to, you know, screw up my bowels and all that good stuff and my gut bacteria.
Yeah.
So
what are your thoughts? Or like, let me see, because I'm like, okay, so advice for people with celiac or people that are trying to live the gluten-free life. Like, what would be your, let's say, top three, like, go-to foods?
I feel like celiac people are funny. I feel like we know the restaurants we can't go to because we've probably gone to the ones that hurt us and won't go back. But obviously you're going to want to avoid like anything that's got a shared deep fryer. So if you go to a restaurant that makes chicken fingers and po' boys and all sorts of stuff, and they don't advertise as like celiac friendly, that means that the fry basket they use is the same one for the fries as it is the chicken tenders, and the breading on the outside of the chicken tenders is going to come off and, you know, particulate in the oil and then, you know, kind of coat whatever you're eating. So you have contaminated food. So I think most people that are celiac know a lot of the ins and outs of it. But as far as like, yeah, dining out, it's like, it's pretty like, you just can't eat soy sauce. There's a lot of things you just can't eat.
You can't have soy sauce?
There's gluten-free soy sauce, but like places don't use it. Like P.F. Chang's has a gluten-free menu, but it's like the only Chinese place. Like you don't
really?
You don't go to like, you know, a good Chinese place downtown and get like gluten-free food.
So if you are celiac and you are visiting New Orleans for the first time, but you want to try something authentically New Orleans, what would you eat?
Oh, there's so many good options.
That's really? What they got?
Well, Southern food is like just, it accommodates really well to the celiac. There's a lot of cornbread, there's grits. That's all good. I can eat that.
Really?
Yeah, corn is good. And then there's meats, obviously. Tons of smoked meats down here and different.
And dooley, you know, sausage.
Yeah, I can eat all that for the most part, unless it's processed for weird for some reason, which it shouldn't be.
Yeah.
So New Orleans is really good. It's just like the gumbos are typically made with a roux, which is white flour and butter. And so you can't eat like a typical gumbo. And
I feel like there's a way around that, though, because I make gumbo sometimes without a roux.
Yeah, you can do corn syrup. You make a roux with a corn syrup instead of white flour. And it's actually corn starch. I don't know why I keep saying corn syrup.
Corn syrup. I know what you meant.
Corn syrup.
Cool.
That's weird. Anyway.
Yeah, so gumbo, I'm like trying to look now because, like, you know, there might be people that are like, I want to visit New Orleans, even though you shouldn't be visiting New Orleans right now because Corona and the pandemic. But now I'm trying to figure out how I can make a gluten-free gumbo. Maybe I'll do that this time because I just made a pot like about 2 weeks ago, but it's already gone. So I'm going to make another, but I'm going to do it without.
I find the corn starch gumbos to be less mealy because they have it's a finer. It's finer ground than white flour.
Yeah.
But I think my taste buds have also kind of like adjusted to be able to taste like it in stuff. Like I can,
can taste gluten.
It's not like the taste. It's not a taste of gluten. It's like there's a texture to flour in certain things.
Gotcha.
But like it's just the thickness of it and the like cream to thickness ratio. I don't know how to describe it, but if you have a gluten-free gravy or a gluten-free and then you try it next to it, it's like, oh, okay. Like that one's better, obviously. The one with gluten is definitely better.
But
there's a texture to it that like if you didn't eat it for like 10 years and you did eat it, you'd be like, I know what that is. That's the demon gluten.
So when it comes to like just now I'm thinking about Lucy's. Can you have the queso?
Yeah, so everything at Lucy's, our chef is amazing. Shout out to Chef Jess. The fry boxes are gluten-free and gluten-friendly, and all the fried food is gluten-free. It's all
nice.
It's all corn now instead of flour.
Cool.
Yeah, so everything on that menu is gluten-free. If you're trying to get like gluten, you can't get a gluten-free po' boy because the bread is not gluten-free.
Right.
But if you want like deep-fried shrimp and chicken tenders and stuff that you can't really get as a gluten-free person, definitely. It's cool.
Sweet. Yeah. Awesome. Well, before we wrap up, I just wanted to find out what you learned about your self-awareness during this conversation.
What I always learn from you, I wish that I didn't spend so much time talking, because I feel like I have a habit of doing that.
And it's
I wish
fine.
I listen to you talk more. But what I do learn from you when you do talk is that you have, I like your perspective on things. I think that you're tough, but you're forgiving. And I think those two things are good when they go hand in hand. So, I like to listen to people and take away from them, like, the rapport that they have and take away characteristics of that. So,
aw, thanks, JD.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what I learned, I mean, that's why I love this podcast. And I've said this throughout, but, you know, I like hearing other people's perspectives. So, yes, I didn't speak nearly as much as you did, but, like, I like hearing your perspective because I still, like, learn things. And when it comes to self-awareness, it's like, for me, at least, I have to hear what other people's perspectives are on things so that I can better my own self-awareness. Like, I learn through other people. Mm-hmm. It takes a community to raise a person.
Yeah.
Not just a child, but, like, even a grown-ass adult. So I feel like that's what I learned, especially from this conversation. And I really am happy that you decided to do this. I was like, I don't know. I guess I was a little nervous at the beginning. I was just like, this is so weird. Like, we haven't actually never had, like, a long, I mean, we've had conversations before, but, like, not in this manner, not so formal, you know?
Yeah,
so
it's nice.
Yeah, it's nice. And you did a great job. I'm so proud of you.
This is my first ever podcast. So
you did great. You actually do very good you could probably start your own podcast. I feel like I told you this before.
No, oh, that's really sweet of you. That's actually the nicest thing anyone said to me all week. So I'm going to take that and put it in my pocket and go home. That's really nice. Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, do you want to give folks your socials, or are you?
Sorry, y'all. My social presence is limited, and I'm kind of trolly at times. So
that's okay.
Yeah,
be a troll. Yeah, a troll is still contributing to society.
Yeah, no. I the truth is that if I do get on YouTube or anything, you'll probably be the first person to know, and I'll let people know then. But for now, y'all, I'm just in the flesh.
It's all good. That's it's all good. All right, y'all. Well, if you have any suggestions on future things that you would like me to cover on the Self-Aware Millennial, please email me at the self-aware millennial at gmail.com, or follow or DM me on Instagram at the Self-Aware Millennial. And as always, if you are listening on Apple Podcasts, please give me 5 stars, or I don't care, give me 4 stars, but I would really much rather you give me 5 stars or a nice little review.
Hey, Christmas YouTube, is on the way. No one likes to grovel for attention. Okay. No one likes to sit here and pander to the likes of you guys that say, hey, I need you to go down and hit that like button and that subscribe share button.
Right.
But sometimes we have to say, hit that like button, that share button, and that subscribe button, so that you guys know that we need you to like and share and subscribe.
Yes,
but
thank
we
you.
Don't want to overstate that you need to do those things. So just, yeah, please like, share, subscribe if you can. We're good.
Thank you.
They get it probably.
Well, y'all, make sure you check out the end of this episode, because I will be dropping a preview of the conversation that JD and I had on sex and non-monogamy on our Patreon. You can access the full episode by visiting www.patreon.com/theselfawaremillennial. Only $5 a month. Even if you wanted to pay just that $5 for that 1 month and listen to all the episodes and get all the self-awareness content that you would like, I ain't gonna hold you. I know these quarantines are hard. And yeah, this was a great conversation. Thank you so much again, JD.
Of course. Thank you. I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Well, I will see y'all later, and I'll see y'all on the tubes, and I'll see y'all next week. Bye. But, like, also, I feel like you had the lube ready to go, and I was just like, wait, where did the lube come from? Because, like, it literally slipped right in. So I was just like, where did this come from? Did it just come out of thin air? Because I...
lube.
It was yeah, so
we talked about
slick.
It,
though.
That's the reason why I had it at the ready, is that you had mentioned that you were interested in the idea, and I was like, well, I'm fucking super interested.
Well, funny thing was when we were first started talking, we were talking about anal primarily. Yeah. We were like, we're gonna do anal when we find each other. Anal. And then we didn't do it for a while, and then, like, we finally just started doing it. Mm-hmm. So
I mean, I'm like one of those people that, like, I like it. I like it, but not I'm not like
Yeah.
Oh my god, I need to be in the ass. Or pussy is for me. It's like, where the dick's supposed to be. I'm happy with that. But the taboo-ness combined with like it being pleasurable does something to the brain of me as a guy. That's like,
really is it different? Nice. How does it feel like different?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Once it's like relaxed, it's like less like. I don't know, the vagina, like you said, has more muscles, and, like, you can feel it pulsing, and, like, it gets grabby.
Yeah.
Especially when girls are coming, like, the shit clenches shut. And, like, if a girl's really tight, they'll literally clench your dick out of their butt. Like, shoot
that's
it out
what
like
I've, yeah.
a rocket. It's hilarious. Yes. It's fucking priceless. It's actually kind of fun. But, like, that difference is so much different than, like, the... whatever the sphincter muscles, as they would say, I think, are very different because they're just not, I don't think there's as many or they're not as in tune or I don't know, but it's just very more relaxed, I would say. And
From my perspective, I mean, it feels nice. And I don't know, for some reason, I just think about like if I had a prostate, maybe it would, maybe I don't know. It feels good though. And I have like come to orgasm from anal before. It's been a long time, but it's happened, and I was just like, it was so unexpected.
I think when you combine all three, I think when you combine, like, it's like a joke from Get 'Em to the Greek, but if you can combine the clitoris, the vagina, and the ass simultaneously,
gosh, then yeah,
you really entered into like now you're in professional realm.
Yes,
this requires an enormous amount of thinking capacity because using your dick and both your hands,
yeah,
while maintaining the atmosphere it doesn't come naturally. It's difficult, but I'm telling you, that's it.
Is it possible to do that with just two people, or can you do that with?
You can do it. You can do it much better with three.
Yeah,
but you can do it easily with two.
So how?
I mean, like if I was going, I would just bend, lay you down, mm-hmm. get on top of you from behind. Slide mm-hmm. a finger in your ass, wrap one hand around your thigh and under you, and play with your clit while I was inside you. So it'd be like this fucking weird thing.
Dang, yeah, that's a lot of work. That's a lot of work. But hey.
You gotta keep your angles right, too. You don't want to, like, just twist your finger randomly.
Dang, yeah, no.
Forget that you're using this finger. Oh, I'm gonna
do that. Nice. Gosh.
But
well.
It's fun. It's all fun.
Yeah, and it's like, experimenting, and that's something that I wish, at least on my end, I feel like I have done a lot of experimenting, but I still feel like there's so much more that I guess I could play around with. But the issue is like, I'm so worried about like asking, especially penis owners, like if I can like play around different areas that is not what they're already used to.
Well, you've got someone that you can ask questions to, so that's good.
Hey!
And pretty wide boundaries.
That's good.
Yeah, no, I'm the same way. I've been trying to like get myself to, I've in my time I've met some women that are funny. They're very submissive, like so mm-hmm. submissive that they like really want a master. Like they really want a master, like so bad.
Dang. So like I've literally
made, I without like this is not my pool. I don't do BDSM. I don't have ropes. It's never been my thing. It's not my thing, and I don't like look I'm totally cool with it. Mm-hmm. It's just not my like I'm not like into it.
Yeah.
Like that. But I mean like I've got girlfriends who like I technically am like the master of, you know. And they text me and they're like, "Can I fuck this guy tonight?" I swear to God. Yeah, do your thing.
Wow, that's
it.
So cool.
They love that shit.
Yeah.
So like the sub master world is not really one that I'm like, I've never been dying to get into it. I've not like looked into it at all. It's just been kind of presented to me by some people that have been are submissive girls that I've slept with. And I think mm-hmm. I'm as a domineering person, I think that's just attraction.
And yeah.
You attract submissive people and likewise, you know. It just kind of goes both ways.
Yeah.